Thank you, Heidi, for sharing, and Hans for your opening. We're going to hit on two of Hans's themes that he talked about today during the sermon today. And so thank you for setting it up nicely. Before I do that, I was struck today, actually Twyla was, but she made a comment to me as we sat down that reminded me of a podcast that I listened to yesterday. I listen to too many podcasts, but the podcasting world has just changed life. For those of you who've never listened to podcasts, you probably shouldn't because they're addicting and they're awful. But one of those that I listen to is by Sam Harris. Sam Harris is an atheist. He's one of the four new atheists that are out there. He's the most interesting one to me, and I'm assuming most of you don't follow atheists just because you don't particularly find yourself in that world. But Sam has always been intriguing for me. Just because he talks about, and he talks about a lot of things that atheists shouldn't care about, and so I always find him intriguing. And one of the things he talks about a lot about the sense of self, life and death, what does it mean to die, and all kinds of things. That's a fascinating. So yesterday, in the podcast I listened to him talk yesterday, he talked a little bit about why he got fascinated with death, which was when he lost a period in his life, he lost a lot of people that he loved dearly. And he said it got him on a track to realize that life is ultimately means one thing. You're going to die and leave people sad, or people around you are going to die and leave you sad. Which is true to some extent. And so yesterday his theme was about death and dying and are you ready to die, which is, again, a fascinating topic for an atheist to talk about, but that is what Sam talks about a lot. And so he had two people on there that were talking about death and dying. And one of the things that the one woman said that caught my attention, as she's written a book about how to prepare yourself for death, and she said one of the things, she works in hospice, and one of the things that she talked about was the thing that she sees more people struggling with on their deathbed than anything else is comments and hurts that their family made to them years earlier. And she said the one thing that she's trying to do is she said, I keep asking my children to forgive me for things that I know that I've hurt them, and I keep encouraging them to come forth and ask for forgiveness as well. Because she says when you get close to death, you want as few things that you have to forgive people for or that you need to don't regret. And I thought, wow, what a very Christian thing to say, is that as we get close to death, those family relationships and the relationships we have become so important, and saying goodbye to loved ones and having them say goodbye to us. Which also got me thinking about all of those of you out there that have lost people. We have a congregation that has a lot of people who have lost people, and just wanted to say that, yeah, my heart goes out for you, and whatever stage you're in grief, grief is a journey that comes and goes everywhere and follows all kinds of paths and reemerges at weird times. And so blessings to all of you that are on that journey. Continue to know that God will walk with you, and I hope that there are not a lot of regrets and that the sadness that you feel is a sadness of joy. What do they say? The sadness that you feel at death can be a sign of the depth of love you had for the person that left you. And it can just be a real blessing and sadness in that way. Okay, sorry to go down that road, but Twyla, you can blame Twyla for that one. We'll go back to Adam and Eve, and you can always blame the woman. So there you go. Today, speaking of journeys, we continue on the journey of Jacob. And Of the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we get to hear the most about Jacob, which again is kind of ironic to me because I think he's the most despicable of the three, and yet we get to hear the most about his life. And today, a couple themes that are going to come out is that God's faithfulness is true despite the behaviors of Jacob and his wives as they continue to do their thing today, and God has a plan that will work out in the end no matter what we do. But God chooses to invite us into that plan, to be participants in his plan, even though he wouldn't need us to be a part of that plan. He chooses to bring us into that and to allow us to work in there. But yet we continue to fail. But God continues to work it out. He continues to transform us and continues to make us into the people that he wants us to be. If you remember correctly, we got through 11 of the 12 sons of Jacob and his one daughter that we get to hear about at least. And so then, so we're going to pick up with that. So Jacob and his four wives now have 11 sons and one daughter, again, that we know of. There might have been more daughters, but at least the one we know of. And we're going to get to verse 30, or chapter 30, verse 1. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, oh, sorry, that's the wrong passage. Let me go down to verse 25, chapter 30, verse 25. After Rachel had given birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so that I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wage, and I will pay them." Jacob said to him, "You know how much I have worked for you, and how your livestock have fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household?" "What shall I give you?" he asked. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied. "But if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted and speckled goat. They will be my wages, and my honesty will testify for me in the future. Whenever you check on my wages you have paid me, any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark colored, will be considered stolen." "Agreed," said Laban. "Let it be as you have said." That same day, Laban removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled and spotted female goats, all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the cares of his son, and he put them a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. Jacob, however, took fresh-colored cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees, and made white strips of them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in water troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were spotted, speckled, or were streak spotted or speckled. The other way around. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves and made the rest face the streaked and colored animals that belonged to Laban. Then he began to separate the flocks himself, and he did not put them with Laban's animals. When the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches in the trough in front of the animals so that they would mate near the branches. But if the animals were weak, he would place them there. So the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones went to Jacob. In this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. The story again. The things that these people do. But, so here we go. So after Rachel gives birth to Joseph, Jacob gets this homesick urge, and he says, "I want to go back to my homeland." And so he goes to his father-in-law, and he makes an interesting request. He says, "I want you to give me my wives and my children." We're not exactly sure why he says that. Did he feel like he had to get permission that they were the property of his father-in-law? Maybe he didn't know what Jacob or what Laban would do, but he says, "Could you please give them to me?" And Laban says, wait, don't leave. I have found favor. If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay, because I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages and I will pay them." So a couple things that stand out. By the way, Laban, is he concerned about losing his grandchildren and his daughters? Not as much as the blessing that he got because Jacob was there. He learned through divination that God blessed him because Jacob was around. Now, God did not want people using divination to find out God's will, because it was considered to be the occult, it was considered to be witchcraft. Now, we find out a little later on in this story about this, but many people in this day would keep a little tiny idol that was made out of metal or wood in their home. It was considered the home idol. It's going to be stolen in this story. And this little idol was your home idol that you kept, and it was considered to be the good fortune of your home. And when you had issues that you couldn't resolve, you would go and ask the idol the question, and the idol would give you the answer. This is where we think that Laban went and got the answer. Where's my blessing coming from? He must have asked his little home idol. And the little home idol must have told him, you are being blessed today because of Jacob. So Laban knows that he's being blessed, and all of his sheep that he's getting and all the animals that he's getting are there because of Jacob. He doesn't want to lose his favor because God's blessing comes down on Jacob and it spills over onto Laban. And so he says, oh, please don't leave. Please don't leave. Name your wage and I'll pay it for you. Now, what's interesting about this passage and an earlier passage, it's almost parallel. You shouldn't stay here because you're relative and work for free. Name your wage and I'll give it to you. Remember we had that fit? That was almost identical word for word. At that time, Jacob said, I want a wife. Now he says, I want sheep. I forget that crazy game you play where you look for sheep and... What is that called, you all? Where you say, I want sheep, I want wood, I want metal. No. What is it called? Pit. Is it pit? No. Dynasty, captain building, nope, none of those things. It's not settlers, it is settlers, yes, that's right. So, is that right, Matthew? I'm pretty sure it's settlers or it's dynasty or it's something like that. But anyways, he says, now I don't want wives, I want sheep. He got way more wives than he asked for, but now he's looking for sheep. And so he says, give me sheep. Now, he goes and he has this weird request. He says, what? What I want you to do is I want you to give me, my pay should be all the streak, spotted, speckled, and dark-colored sheep. Basically, he says, anything that's not pure white, I want to be mine. Anything that's pure white will be yours. And that way, when you go out and look at your flocks, you'll know whether I'm stealing your sheep or not, because you can see, if I have a white, pure white sheep or pure white goat in my possession, that's yours. And you can just take it from me because that's theft on my part. He says, I'm going to separate them. Laban loves this deal. I'm assuming, and again, I don't know my sheep and goats that well, but I'm assuming that this is a recessive gene. That the spotted and speckled was a recessive gene and they were all white was the dominant gene. And so Laban is thinking, this guy's stupid because I'm going to get a lot more sheep and goats than he is. He's going to get nothing. And this is great for me. God's going to continue to bless. I'm going to get a lot. This guy's going to get nothing. I also like it that Jacob says he's going to separate the goats and the sheep and put them in different places. But Laban goes out the very next day and he does it himself. He's like, I'm not going to trust this guy. I'm going to do it myself. And then what does he do? He takes all the speckled and spotted goats that were Jacob's. He separates them from his own by 3 days. So his boys are out there taking care of these sheep that are Jacob. Jacob's over here taking Laban's sheep. They're taking care of each other's sheep and goats. Not the way we traditionally do it. But these two men cannot hardly trust each other further than they can throw each other. They're not the most trusting type, nor would I trust either one of these men to be in business with them. They would not want to be a partnership that I would want to be in partnership with. Now, I often think about this. If it really was a recessive gene, and I don't know if that's true, and you had all white goats and sheep, and you're trying to breed them to get spotted and speckled, man, the luck of getting two recessive genes to connect to have lots of spotted and speckled sheep would be really pretty hard. So Jacob comes up with this weird, weird scheme. I have looked and looked and looked. There is no support that this works. So if you think this is something you should do on your farm, don't. There is absolutely no support anywhere that putting up, cutting pieces of wood and peeling back the bark and having your animals mate in front of them does anything. I'm assuming that this is just some kind of scheme that Jacob came up with that had nothing to do with the blessing that he got. This goes back to we build what? Broken cisterns. God blessed him not because of this craziness that he did. If anything, it's probably some kind of witchcraft or some kind of like some own scheme that he came up with. But it wasn't why he got blessed. God chose to bless him despite this wild scheme is my theory. But it's a wild theory. Look at it. It's there it is. What we know is that Jacob ended up with a lot of spottle speckled and streaked lambs or goats and discolored non-white sheep. He became really big. Verse 43, in this way the man grew exceedingly prosperous and he came to own large flocks, females and male servants, camels and donkeys. We know he's rich because he has camels. You didn't have camels if you weren't rich back in the day. He has camels. God told him what? I'm going to take you out of this. I'm going to send you far away, and I'm going to bless you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to be here. That was when he met God at Bethel. He's now being blessed with all of this stuff. He has a lot of sheep. Laban is getting less and less sheep. He has more sheep. Now, Jacob was not the only person who recognized that he was getting wealthy. Chapter 31. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, Jacob has taken everything our father owns and gained all of his wealth which belonged to our father. And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude towards him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, I see that your father's attitude towards me is not what it was before, but the God of my fathers has been with me. You know that I have worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said the speckled ones will be your wages, then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. If he said the streaked ones were your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. In breeding season, I once had a dream where I looked up and saw the male goats mating with the flocks that were streaked, speckled, and spotted. The angel of the Lord said to me in that dream, Jacob, I answered, here am I. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flocks were streaked, speckled, or spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has done is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. Then Rachel and Leah replied, Do we still have any shares in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took away from our father belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God has told you. Then Jacob put his children and his wives on the camels, and they drove all their livestock ahead of him, along with the goods he had accumulated in Padan-Aram, to go to Aram and go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household god. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had, crossed the Euphrates River, and headed for the hill country of Gilead. Now, so Jacob realizes Laban, I don't know how he heard it, whether he heard it through his wives, somehow he heard that Laban's sons are not thrilled that Jacob is getting rich at their father's expense. They watch after sheep after sheep after goat ends up with Jacob. And they realize there are getting fewer and fewer of these animals. And Laban also becomes suspicious of Jacob. And again, we don't know what happened, but he must have went back to... He changed his wages 10 times. He must have said at first, you can have all the spotted, all the speckled, all the white, all the whatever. And whatever he changed it to, Jacob had more and more of those. That's why I don't think his little trickery was the thing to go. It was God that doing this. And he turns to his wife. A lot of people believe that God was gently making him homesick, so he went home. He didn't get that. He wasn't brave enough, but God continued to bless him. So, if you remember, he worked for his wives for 14 years. He stayed there for 6 more years, so he's now been there 20 years. He's 97 years old, and God tells him, it's time to go home. You've been here for 20 years. Go back home. So he does. Well, he starts, but he's still a little concerned. But he has this dream where the God of Bethel says, hey, I'm the God of Bethel. You and I made this agreement, and now it's time for you to go back to my native land, and I will be with you. That's the promise God made back in Bethel. Now God tells him again, when you go home, I will be with you. Then right at the very end, we hear that he puts his wives and his children on their camels. I hope they all had their own camel. I don't know. Maybe they didn't. But I just can't imagine traveling with camels and a couple thousand, 10,000. I don't know how many sheep he had by now. Lots of sheep. This was a slow-moving caravan, and it took a while for them to go anyplace. Although they do book it here. This is the one time that Jacob moves pretty quickly. We hear that he left. And he did not tell his father-in-law that he was leaving. And then we have this weird little line that says what? When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household god. The question remains, why did Rachel steal her father's household god? One of the things we learn is that what? Laban was not only a worshiper of God of the Bible. He was a worshiper of idols. He followed, again, the using the idols to find out information. But why would Rachel steal this household God? We don't know. There's lots of guesses. Number one, which may be the truth, she was afraid that her father would what? Ask the idol where we went and he would track us down. That's the most common theory about why she stole the god, because she didn't want her father to use it to find out where they had went, because the idol told her dad a lot of things. That's number one. That's the one theory. So the other thing that is very true, once you got, if the child who was given the household god, that was considered one of the prize inheritance at the time. Did she think, I'm the special daughter, I should be the one that gets inherited, because they're talking about inheritance, they're talking about all those things. Did she steal it because she wanted that special inheritance? Number three, did she steal it because she wanted to worship the idol? Did she want the idol in her possession because she trusted the answers that the idol gave? We don't know. I will say this, it's a long time before Jacob tells his family, we're going to put away our idols. So there was idols floating around even in Jacob's home. And number four, some people believe she stole it from her father to force her father to give up the belief and the trust in idols. Pick whichever one you prefer. But Rachel stole his idol. That's a big deal. You don't steal people's idols. You don't steal your dad's idol. Now, the other part that I find fascinating here is that Leah and Rachel don't feel like they belong in their family. What do they say? Doesn't our father treat us like foreigners? First he sells us. Then he takes the money that he got from the sale of us, which they describe this in a very kind of non-culturally acceptable way, but they said, our dad sold us off, and then he took all that money and wasted us, so any of the money that we were going to get in inheritance is gone. So the stuff that the sheep that you got from our dad is really the inheritance we should have got had our dad not blown our money. A couple things that jump out at me. Number one, Rachel and Leah knew that their dad was a trickster. He was a deceiver. He was somebody that would do things to get ahead and get what he wanted. They knew that he cared more about possessions than them. And number two, they had a sense that he did not care for them as much as they would have liked. How many times do people around us feel like foreigners in their own family, feel like they're not accepted or not wanted? Hopefully that's not true for any of you, but that's often the case for many people. So they tell their husband, this is the one time that the two sisters agree, there's probably more times than that, but this is one time we get to see, these two sisters say, hey, we're ready to go with you. We're ready to leave with you. There's nothing here for us. Let's do this. So he gets his family and they leave. Now, he also does not tell his father-in-law that he's leaving. He appears to be afraid that his father-in-law will do something if his father-in-law discovers they're gone. And that's probably not crazy, as we're going to find out. So, verse 22. On the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Now, I don't know if this is because he was shearing his sheep. His sheep and Jacob's sheep were at least 3 days apart at one time. So did it take a messenger 3 days to go from Laban's sheep or from Jacob's property where his sheep were to Laban and tell him, hey, your son-in-law has left? So taking his relatives, Laban takes his relatives and he pursues Jacob for 7 days and he caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. Which again took him 4 days to track them down after he started. I don't know how many of his relatives he took. Then God came to Laban in a dream that night and said to him, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country of Gilead, and where Laban overtook him. And Laban and his relatives camped there too. Laban said to Jacob, what have you done? You have deceived me. You have carried off my daughters like captives in war. Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me so that I could send you away with joy and singing to music of the tambourines and the harps? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. You have done a foolish thing. I have the power to harm you. But last night the God of your father said to me, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Now you have gone off because you have forgotten. Now you have gone off because you long to return to your father's household. But why did you steal my gods? Jacob answered to Laban, I was afraid because I thought you would take your daughters away from me by force. If you find anyone who has your God, the person shall not live. In the presence of your relatives, see for yourself whether there is anything of yours with me. If so, take it. Now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. So Laban went into Jacob's tent and went into Leah's tent and the tent of the two female servants, and he found nothing. After he came out of Leah's tent, he entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household god and put them inside of her camel's saddle and was sitting on them. Laban searched throughout everything in the tent and found nothing. Rachel said to her father, don't be angry with me, my lord, that I cannot stand up in your presence. I am having my period. So he searched, but he could not find the household gods. Jacob was very angry and took Laban to task. What is my crime? He asked Laban. How have I wronged you that you have hunted me down? Now you have searched through all my goods and you have found, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine. And let them judge between the two of us. Then he's going to do a little rant that I'll talk about here in a second. So Laban comes after him, finds him in 7 days with his relatives. They have a big family reunion, although it's not much of a reunion. It's more of a fight. And they are there, and he says to Jacob, Jacob, why in the world did you do this to me? You have done a great evil. You have done something really bad. You have taken my daughters and my grandchildren and you've snuck off in the middle of the night. You didn't even let me kiss them goodbye. I'm sure Jacob snickered to himself when he heard that. He said, I'm sure you wanted to have a big party when we left. You didn't want anything to do with that. And then Laban does what? Laban says, I had the ability to harm you if I had wanted to. But your God, he actually doesn't say your God, he said the God of your father told me that I shouldn't. Remember when God said long time ago to Jacob, I'm going to protect you? Here is a clear example where God steps in and he protects Jacob from Laban. I don't know what Laban would have done. Would have he removed his daughters from Jacob's care with force? We don't know. But we know that God intervened. God stepped in and protected Jacob from whatever Laban was going to do to him. So then Laban brings up, hey, one of you stole my gods, the little tiny house idol. And Jacob does what? Makes a very, very rash statement. I like the Bible. It says in verse 32. Now Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. Jacob says, hey, the person who you find that has your gods shall die, shall not live, should not live. Jacob makes a very rash vow here. Do you remember the guy, and I forget what his name was in the Old Testament as well, who said to the Lord when he was returning from war, I believe, the first thing that comes out of my door, I will sacrifice to you. And remember what came out of his door? His daughter, who she got to spend a few days in the mountains with her friends before her sacrifice. It's always a hard story for me. Wow, all the way around. I want you to file back in your head. Does Rachel die as a result of this theft? This is one of the things that where Jewish people who are big into Judaism believe something very different than we do about why Rachel died. Many Jewish believers believe that what? Rachel died in childbirth because she stole the idol. That what Jacob, the Hebrew word Jacob grieves for Rachel's death can be taken in the Hebrew to say, I killed my wife. Many Jewish people believe that Jacob believes that Rachel died because he made this vow. And it took many years, but she died because Jacob said, may the one who took the idol of yours die. I don't know. We know that what? Jacob mourns mightily when Rachel dies, but we also know that he loved her deeply. Now, again, Jacob does not know that his wife stole. I often wondered, when did he find out that Rachel took it? Somewhere down the road he must have, unless Rachel just kept it for herself. I'm sure, though, he got very afraid when he realized that his wife, his favorite wife, had stolen the idol, and he said, may that person die. Then Jacob says to them, hey, listen, whatever you found of yours, bring it out here and let our relatives see who's the guilty party. Is it me or is it you? He knew that there was nothing there. And so Jacob then launches into this rant against his father-in-law. And he says what? Verse 10. Actually, let's go up a little bit more than that. Let's go back to verse 36. Jacob was angry and he took Laban to task. And he said, what is my crime? He asked Laban. How have I wronged you that you have hunted me down? Now that you have searched through all my goods and have found and have not found what was belonging to your household, put it in front of me and your relatives and let them judge between us. Have I not been with you now for 20 years? Your sheep and your goats have not miscarried, nor have they been eaten, nor have I eaten the rams of your flock. I did not bring your animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself. And you demanded payment for me from whatever was stolen by day or night. This is my situation. Heat consumed me in the daytime and cold at night, and the sheep fled from my eyes. That's a person who's been with sheep too long. The sheep had fled from my eyes. It was like this for 20 years, and I was in your household. I worked for you for 14 years for your daughters and 6 years for your flocks, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac. I always like this. The God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac. He doesn't even say the God of Abraham and Isaac. He says the fear of Isaac, his dad. I don't know why he doesn't say the God of Abraham and Isaac, but he says the fear of Isaac. Had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. So here he is. Jacob says to his father-in-law, listen, your sheep have done well when I took care of them. They have not miscarried. I have not eaten your sheep. I have not eaten your rams. I did not bring home animals torn by wild beasts. See, if I had hired you to be a shepherd for my flocks back in the day, and if my sheep were gone and you couldn't bring their carcass back, you had to pay for them. But if you could bring their half-eaten carcass back to me, I could not make you pay for them. Because the theory was, if you could bring a half-eaten carcass back, you were brave enough and strong enough and didn't run away, and you fought off whatever animal had torn into that carcass of that lamb. So what does Jacob say here? I never brought you back one animal that had been torn to pieces by wild beasts. I just paid you sheep, and I just paid for that. Even though I could have brought it back, and you could have, and I, you would have not been able to make me pay for that because I fought those animals away. Jacob is saying, I went above and beyond. I absorbed loss. I took all the sheep that were stolen and who were torn apart by animals, and I paid you back for them. There was nothing. Now again, I hope he did this because he was honorable and he wanted to go above and beyond what was expected, or whether he didn't want Laban to have anything over him. I don't know which one it was. I'm going to hope and pray that it was part of his transformational process and he was saying, I'm going to be a better man and I am going to absorb the losses that they want. And then he says, you've changed my wages 10 times. You really wanted me to go away empty-handed, but God continually stepped in, and I have walked away with large flocks, not because of you, but because of my God. Or doesn't even say that, the God of my father and the fear of my God of my grandfather and the fear of my father. Now Laban must have been pretty taken back by this, and he must have felt put in his place because he says this, verse 43. Laban answered Jacob, the women are my daughters and the children are my children. The flocks are my flocks. All you see is mine. Yet what can I do today about these daughters of mine and about the children that they have bore? Come now, let's make a covenant, you and I, and let's let it serve as a witness between us. Ah, I hate this statement. Laban says, listen, these children are mine. These wives are mine. The sheep are mine. Nothing you have is yours. But you know what? God has told me I can't do anything about that. He throws his hands up and he says, let's make a covenant. I can't get them back. I really would love to, but let's make a covenant between you and I. The animosity between these two men has gotten so high and so strong that they conclude that the only way that we can end this is to make a covenant between us that says, I will not kill you, you will not kill me. This is not the way God designed for conflict to be resolved. So Jacob takes a stone, verse 45, and he sets it up as a pillar, and he says to his relatives, gather some stones. So they took stones and piled them into a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it something, and Jacob called it something else. Now, here's the part that's interesting. These two men who have spoken to each other, I don't know what language they spoke to each other in, they resort to speaking their home languages. They don't continue to speak in the common language that they spoke. They go back to speaking Hebrew and Aramaic, and they begin to call things in different names. Is that a sign of a broken trust? Is that a sign of a breakdown in where they should be going? Laban said, verse 48, this heap, by the way, both of these words mean a witness heap. This heap is a witness between you and me today. That is why it is called Gilead. And it's also called Mizpah, because he said, may the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. If you mistreat my daughters Or if you take any wives besides my daughters, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between me and you. Laban also said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is the pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, nor will you go past this heap and pillar on my side to harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, his relatives, and the God of their father judge between us. So these two men make a covenant, and they have God as their witness, because you need to have God as you need to have a third party as their witness. They chose to have God as their witness, and they say to each other, listen, I'm never going to cross this heap of rocks to harm you. You should never cross this heap of rocks to harm me. Talk about drawing a line down the middle of the car seat where your sibling can't cross. This is one that right down the middle of the land that says, you will not cross and I will not cross. But Laban says to him, listen, remember that if you ever misharm my daughters or you bring in another wife, God is our witness that is something you should not do. They ate their little celebratory covenant feast that was part of the thing. And then this other verse comes in, or the last part of 53 and 54, which makes me think that Jacob didn't trust this again. So what is it? So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. It also drives me crazy that he's taking an oath not in God, but in the fear of his father Isaac. Why was he so afraid of his father Isaac? He offered sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to another meal, which would suggest that he's making another covenant, or he doesn't trust the covenant that he just made with his father-in-law. And they had eaten and they spent the night there. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them, and he left and returned home. He got to do what he said he wanted to do. Kiss his daughters goodbye and kiss his grandchildren goodbye. Now, think about this. They never see each other ever again. Which happens a lot in these stories. This is not the way God wanted this animosity between these two men to end, but that's the way it ended. What I hope we begin to see here is Jacob's transformation into becoming a better person, a person that begins to trust in God. What we notice in contrast is that Laban is not transformed. Laban stays as self-focused and selfish as he was before. Laban continues to care more about possessions than he does about people. He continues to be self-seeking, and he ends up with nothing. He ends up with less sheep, he ends up with less daughters, and he ends up not seeing his grandchildren. Jacob walks away blessed. Not, I would argue, because he deserves the blessing, but because God is working out his plan through Jacob. He walks away with wives and sheep and many possessions. The other thing that I think is a lesson in this passage is deception is contagious. Jacob was deceptive. Laban was deceptive. And who becomes deceptive in this story? Rachel. She uses deception. She pretends to be on her period so her father can't find his household God. We need to be careful about what we model in our homes to our children. What we model is often more what's caught than what we taught, right? What's the old saying? Watch what I say, not what I do. Number three, sometimes we do feel like strangers in our own home. In those times, God is with us. It's also a reminder that we should not give up trying to find reconciliation. But when we can't find reconciliation, God will meet us in our aloneness. Number four, ultimately, blessings in our lives don't come from our craftiness or our trickery, but they come from God. All good gifts come down from our Heavenly Father. They do not come from what we do, but from God, what God gives us. We need to be reminded today the not to follow the path of Laban, but to follow the path of Jacob, even though that troubles me to say, because I don't like the man. But that God is the faithful one who is going to do what he's going to do. Next week, we're going to find out that Jacob and Esau meet, and we get to see Jacob wrestling with God. Again, another really interesting passage, followed by an even worse passage, because Jacob is just a despicable person. Remember again, God is greater than all the despicable people in your life, including us. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you that all good gifts are from you. Thank you for the many blessings that you have given us. Father, help us to be grateful and to acknowledge the role that you do in giving us the gifts we want. Help us not to become self-sufficient, because that is so easy to do, particularly given what we have and we can depend on ourselves. Father, humble us, help us to continue to look to you in what we have. Thank you so much for your faithfulness in working out your plan. Thank you so much that your plan will be worked out, and in the end, your ways will be known to every human being. Thank you so much for your love and your care. In your name, amen.